Welcome back to a special live political roundtable on Rhode Island Public Radio. We're coming to you from the Rhode Island Foundation in downtown Providence. We're talking with the Republican candidates for governor, Alan Fung and Ken Block. They're going to ask each other some questions. Alan Fung, you're first up with a question for Ken Block.
You know, Ken, you've talked about openness and transparency in government, you know, yet you continue to refuse to release your tax return, whereas every candidate in this gubernatorial race has released theirs. And, you know, you've jumped on a position that you'll release them if you're elected governor and to ask the voters to put that blind trust in you. What are you hiding? Are you hiding campaign expenses within your, you know, business? What are you afraid of? Don't you think the taxpayers deserve to know at least what you paid in taxes?
Well, you would know that a tax return wouldn't show that if it was happening anyway. That's a really ridiculous accusation you just made. The reality is that there is no requirement for anybody to divulge their tax return. That is not a law. I did just fill out my ethics filing where all of my sources of income were detailed. That's out there. Everyone can look at it. The bottom line in Rhode Island is that as a small business owner, that details in great detail what my businesses look like, what the margins are in my business. And as a small business owner, you don't divulge that because that helps your competition. And I am in competition with businesses not only here in Rhode Island, but across the country and across the world. And I will not disadvantage myself in those businesses because you're making a ridiculous request to me.
Quickly, Alan Fung, is that a persuasive answer? If not, why not?
No, absolutely. Because he could, just like some of the candidates done in the past, show at least what he paid in taxes, what his effective rate is. Don't you think that the taxpayers deserve to know exactly how much Ken Block is paying in taxes, or at least the percentage that he's paying?
What do you say, Ken Block?
I say if that's a legal requirement, I'll fulfill every legal requirement that we have to fulfill. If you're asking me to divulge some of the most deeply private information that people have, I won't do it unless I have to.
All right, Ken Block, it's your turn. What is your question for Alan Fung?
You know, Alan, they say that the mark of a good person is their ability to learn from their mistakes. And my question for you is regarding the Cranston police scandal. How would you have handled this differently to avoid what's happened now? How would you have managed the department? How would you have handled the problem with the individuals who've been on paid leave for 2 years? And would you have handled the ticket scandal differently in terms of bringing the state police in more quickly as opposed to taking 3 months the way that you did?
First of all, it didn't take 3 months. You know, as chief executive, I'm responsible for many departments and over 600 employees. And if an employee acts improperly, we have an obligation as the chief executive to respond and hold people accountable. And that's what I've done in Cranston, not only within the police department, but any other director or even employee. And on the police ticketing issues, when those allegations surfaced, we had our internal affairs department start immediately investigating. And then we brought in an outside, because there were political accusations, we brought in an outside New Jersey investigator to oversee to make sure it was done fairly. And then when we started to receive anonymous letters, and this is the disappointing thing, we started receiving anonymous letters about making unsubstantiated accusations against good officers, that's when I had to put a stop to it and ensure that the state police, and ask the state police to come in. I took that decision to ask them not only to take a look at the ticketing situation, but also do a top-to-bottom review of all the personnel issues that were percolating there. And we've moved on. The police chief has, you know, retired, and we have an opportunity to, you know, move the department forward in the best interest of the residents of Cranston.
Ken Block, with the benefit of hindsight, how would you have handled the Cranston police situation differently?
Well, I need to first correct a little bit of the record that Alan just said, because he didn't willingly bring in the state police. His city council was prepared just a few hours from when Alan brought in the state police to pass a resolution ordering him to bring in the state police. So this wasn't a willful action on his part. He had essentially had a gun held to his head.
Mr. Fung, what do you say?
You know, and this is unfortunately where someone has half the facts and is not in government and doesn't understand what's going on. The real facts were what was getting leaked out to the press was inaccurate information from anonymous letters, which contained just, you know, a modicum of truth, but targeting officers that weren't involved. And the investigation showed that.
I'm sorry, you didn't address the question. Did you or did you not ask the state police to come in just a few hours before your city council was going to vote to pass a resolution to ask you
please,
to bring in this, to bring
please,
in the state
Ken.
Police.
I did answer the question. And the question that I'm answering talked about the timeline and what really happened. And what really happened was I made that decision to call Colonel O'Donnell based on what was happening in front of me, as any good chief executive would do.
But it did happen just a few hours before the city council was going to vote on a resolution to order you to do it. Did they not? Was
Ken,
that not
I
the
had
case?
I had talked to the state police, Colonel O'Donnell, before when I made that decision. So it wasn't hours before, but I had laid the groundwork with the colonel to bring in the state police.
Alan Fung, you're next up. What's your question for Ken Block?
You know, Ken, you claim to be an outsider who wants to reform government, but you also claim to make a living from government contracts, such as what you did for the state of Texas. Since you're refusing to release your tax returns, can you tell us how many government contracts that you profit from, with which states, and how much are you getting paid from these government contracts?
That's all a matter of public record, of course. My company is a small software business. We deliver the food stamp benefits through our computer systems to the state of Texas and the government of Puerto Rico. We deliver $6 billion to almost 4 million people in the state of Texas. And I believe the numbers, and I'm not exactly sure, but I believe it's almost $2 billion to roughly 2 million people on the island of Puerto Rico.
Ken Block, were you done there?
I mean, if you really want me to get into the compensation, that's all completely open records information.
Sure.
I mean, we could talk about other things, but if you really want me to talk about the
absolutely
value of every single contract,
if you're not,
we
if
can totally do that. We're
absolutely
paid about $750,000 a year by the state of Texas to run the computer software for that state. And we subcontract to prime vendors on the island of Puerto Rico. The value of that floats around quite a bit. It's usually somewhere in the order of $200,000 to $400,000 a year.
All right. Before we go back to panel questions, one more question from Ken Block to Alan Fung.
Thank you. You know, I've heard from a number of Cranston residents, including a few CPAs, that the increase in the garbage tax that you've imposed in Cranston for some people has been as much as $200. And for a number of people in Cranston, that's equivalent to what is in effect a 5% increase in their property tax. That has the same impact as a 5% increase in the property tax. So my question to you is, when you talk about not increasing taxes, but you're charging some people the equivalent of 5% increase in property taxes with $200 to collect garbage where they'd paid much less than that the year before, how do you explain that, and do you think that's acceptable? I hear from a ton of people we talk to in Cranston, they're very unhappy with this.
You know, first of all, I've heard from many residents that they're finally glad that we're moving towards this new system, which encourages more recycling, which can produce more revenue for the city of Cranston. But I'm not sure where you're talking about the garbage tax. We haven't raised taxes. What is happening is, in fact, we are able to not raise taxes because in this budget year alone, we're realizing a savings of $130,000 in that contract. And over the life of the contract, it's going to approach, you know, $130,000 for several years, is getting close to $1 million. So, Ken, I'm not sure what you're talking about. And the last thing, and one of the good reasons that we're doing, is we're helping many of the residents, particularly in the urban areas, that have had critter issues. So all three of them, we're actually reducing our costs on trash, hopefully getting increased revenues from increased recycling, and solving a problem that we're having. So I've heard positive things from many residents.
Are you saying that it's not costing Cranston residents more to have their trash collected now?
It's actually costing them $130,000 less.
No. That's not my question. My question to you directly.
Isn't that
was,
an important distinction, though, if the collective cost is less?
Here's the question again. I want to be very clear here. You're parsing words.
Parsing words.
You are parsing words because I'm hearing from.
Let's wrap this up because I want to move on.
All right. I'm hearing from many Cranston residents that they are now paying a fee. If you don't call it a tax, you don't want to call it a tax. Let's call it a fee. They're now paying a fee. They're paying more money to have their trash collected now than they were last year. In fact, they used to have their trash collected last year. They didn't pay a fee. Now they're paying an additional fee to still have their trash collected. Is that true or is that false?
Cranston residents should not be paying a fee. The only fee that would be associated with it is we got rid of a lot of the white goods, like the bulky items that, like the heavy, like furnitures that you have out there. So I'm not sure. I'm not charging residents. Collectively, that's how we're saving dollars, whether it's this innovative program with trash or any other savings that we've moved to, and it's saving $130,000, Ken. So I'm not sure where you're getting from that all Cranston residents are paying a fee.
You have a PR problem.
Ken Block, can Rhode Island afford an unlimited...
Ken, I think you have a math problem.
Okay, guys. Can Rhode Island afford an unlimited number of new charter schools? If not, where and how do you draw the line?
No, of course Rhode Island cannot afford an unlimited number of charter schools. It is a true statement that some of the best performing schools in our state are charters. It's also a true statement that we have some charters that really struggle. What is also true is that what we don't do well in this state is take the lessons learned from our well-performing charter schools and apply some of those lessons into our public schools. I am an education reformer. I'm married to a school teacher, and my father's a retired college professor. So I have very good insight into educational issues, and I understand the positions of teachers as well as students and as the parent of two school-age children. I really understand this. We have to do better. We have to change because what we're doing right now isn't working, so we need to do it carefully. We need to do it quickly, but we also need to do it thoroughly because we can't afford to continue underserving our kids.
Well, we're all for being quick and thorough. Alan Funk, do you have a more specific answer on where to draw the line on the number of new charter schools?
You know, I support high-performing charters, just like what Commissioner Gist has done, particularly in a lot of urban areas where you have hard-to-reach kids that really need that extra attention, extra help with the school systems. I support having choice for those students, and we need to make sure that we're constantly evaluating charters to ensure that they're successful. And I am a strong proponent of mayoral academies because we're starting to see a lot of those results, and the biggest result is you're seeing parents, many parents, wanting to send their kids because they're doing well, particularly with respect to testing.
Our next question from Scott McKay.
Seems like every Republican and a lot of people in the business community complain about state regulations. Can each of you give me, starting with Mr. Block, two environmental regulations that you think impede business growth in Rhode Island? Specific, please.
Environmental regulations.
That's correct, because you guys are like herding eels sometimes.
Listen, neither of my businesses have any environmental regulations attached to them, so I don't have direct experience of that. I don't have an answer to that question.
Mr. Fung.
I can give you one. Our mandates on renewable energy are increasing our energy costs. And please don't take it that I'm opposed to renewable energies. I do support renewable energies that compete with fossil fuel prices. But I don't support projects like deep water wind because of the cost that it has on all the ratepayers. So those type of mandates that would increase the cost on all of us, particularly with respect to the employers who do take a look at utility costs, that's one of the biggest problems that we have. I'd like to also see more hydro
coming
in,
Quebec
Hydro, and any type of elimination of mandates on that so that any of, well, it's National Grid or any other retailers can get that type of energy and produce and send it out to the consumers at a lower cost.
Thank you,
those
Mr.
are
Block,
two areas.
Could we get your opinion on deep water wind and the state subsidy, the ratepayer subsidy there?
Yeah, so the shame of that project is that Rhode Island taxpayers are paying $600 million over 10 years to help a private company achieve some of the regulatory hurdles they have to achieve to go bigger. We can't afford that. We're never going to get that money back. And the biggest shame of all is we don't have a right to go buy the cheap energy from the Bing Windmill Farm when they build it. It's outrageous. But, you know, we have other issues that are more easily solved than deep water. We have a renewable energy standard where we're going to spend $9 million a year. The problem is we're spending all that money out of state. What we need to do is we need to be smarter with our money. If we're going to subsidize this kind of renewable energy project, we should be doing it in-state. We shouldn't be helping companies out of state.
So we shouldn't be buying Quebec Power,
though
it's cheap?
If we can find a way to spend that money here locally and keep that money inside our economy, we achieve two goods at once.
But you're never going to buy hydropower as cheap as the Canadians can produce it.
Well, we can't buy hydropower in-state at all. We don't have what that is there.
Precisely.
But for $9 million, I would prefer, as governor, to watch that money spent on projects in-state.
Alan Fung, your opponent says deep water wind is a bad deal for Rhode Island ratepayers. What do you say?
I've said that from the beginning. I'm glad to hear Ken finally, you know, come into that realization, because I know that he took an opposite stance before. So I never supported Deepwater.
Let's go to Maureen Moakley.
There's been much talk over the past few weeks about Buddy Cianci entering the race for mayor. Just generally speaking, what's your opinion of his entry into the race? Do you have any comments about that?
I've been pretty busy, so I haven't paid that much attention to the
Come on, you have to be under a rock not to know about this.
The bottom line is he's probably one of the better qualified candidates, but I also tell you that the perception of Mr. Cianci with his background of becoming mayor again is probably not the best perception that Providence could get right now.
Mr. Fung?
I'm planning on supporting the Republican mayoral candidate, and that's Dan Harrop. I think Dan's got a lot of good ideas to help Providence move forward.
He may drop out. He's talked about the fact that he may wait till October and drop out. You know, what do you say to that?
Maybe Ken might drop out as well.
Alan Funk, why is it that there are only 11 Republican lawmakers in the 113-seat General Assembly? How come Republicans can't do better in electing more of their colleagues to the State House?
I think what we really have to do is continue to build upon a farm system. We've tried to do that in Cranston, and it's worked. You know, when I first got into office, it was a 9-0 Democratic council, and, you know, I started supporting a lot of the candidates, building up that farm team in Cranston. We've had successes on the city council, school committee, with people who are responsible for providing that balance. We have to do that in every city and town, throughout the state of Rhode Island, building up that farm system so they can increase and run for the next office. That's how we're going to build a model of more candidates, a better stable of candidates that understand the issue, have the experience, and can work together to get things done, you know, and be that opposition.
Ken Block, what do you say to the same question of why Republicans haven't been able to elect more lawmakers?
Yeah, it's a chicken and the egg problem. The donors at this point in time don't necessarily have a lot of confidence in the party. And they don't see a lot of candidates, and the candidates don't see a lot of donors, and so you have a big misfire. The party needs to be rebuilt. There needs to be a ton of focus on building the party, bringing in the candidates, giving them the training, making sure the messaging is acceptable and will work in a state like Rhode Island. And we have to show results with an activist governor like the way I plan to be, with the results that I hope to achieve. I'm hoping that we can really re-empower the party and bring good people into government, because we just don't have nearly enough people competing for important seats.
What elected official in Rhode Island, do you most admire, Ken Block, and why? Quickly.
I can't think of one.
How about you, Alan Funk?
I like a lot of our Republicans, particularly Representative Anthony Giarrusso is, you know, fighting for a lot of small business owners because he comes from that. I think, you know, on the GA side, he's, you know, doing a lot of good things there.
Okay, our time is up. Thank you for joining us. Republican candidates for governor, Alan Fung and Ken Block. Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay and URI political science professor Maureen Moakley. I'd like to thank the Rhode Island Foundation for hosting and co-sponsoring this forum. Rhode Island Public Radio general manager Joe O'Connor. News director Catherine Welch. We couldn't do it without our terrific audio engineer Aaron Reed. You've been a great audience here, and we very much thank you for listening and taking part in our live one-hour roundtable here at One Union Station.